You're listening to Package Your Genius, a conversation designed to give you clarity on your calling and serve as a catalyst for your career. I'm your host, Amanda Miller Littlejohn. It feels so good to be back for another episode of Package Your Genius. I have been in the lab working on some exciting new content and programming for the rest of the year. So I'm excited to chat with you guys today. And thank you so much for those of you who have been leaving me sweet words on my Instagram and on social media and giving me feedback on how you're enjoying the previous episodes of the podcast. But today I wanted to get on here and share a story that I actually shared in my email list or news. It's not really, I can't really call it a newsletter because it's not like news. Sometimes it's just my musings on life and personal branding and being a high achiever, etc. So my emails, the emails that I send out to subscribers, I wrote an email this morning and it was pretty well received, and I've been getting notes back from some of you who it resonated with. So I thought it might make a good episode of the podcast for those of you who may not be on that email list and may enjoy listening rather than reading. But essentially, I told the story of when I was in second grade, and I learned that I was quote unquote different. So I'll just share the story with you so that you see what I'm talking about. So I remember being in the second grade, and I don't know, for whatever reason, I started school in kindergarten back in the 80s. That's what you did, right? So there was no preschool or pre-K, or maybe there was preschool and pre-K, but my parents didn't know about it or weren't trying to put me in it. So I started school at age 5 in kindergarten. And I remember kindergarten being pretty, elementary, basic, whatever you would like to call it, learning about shapes, socializing, learning how to be with friends, learning how to follow directions and that sort of thing. So it wasn't really time to do any real academic learning. First grade, more of the same. We're learning how to use scissors and how to cut and paste. But by second grade, I think we were learning how to read and to do basic math. And I happened to be in a split classroom. So it was a second, third grade split classroom. So we had older students in with us. So I was in second grade, but there were third graders too. So whenever the teacher would teach something to the third graders, I would hear it and learn it too, because why not, right? Like it was happening around me. And so I liked to learn and I learned it. Well, anyway, I remember we were learning multiplication and it was pretty easy to me and I liked doing it. It was fun at the time. Later, math would become the bane of my existence, but at the time it was fun. And I remember my teacher came up with this game to teach us math or to kind of help us learn how to do simple math problems. And so she split the class up into two groups and she made us form a line in front of the chalkboard. So there were two lines, line one and line two, and I was in the first line. And so she would go up to the board and write some sort of math problem on the board, and we would run up. So a player from team one would run up and a player from team two would run up, and whoever solved the problem fastest got another turn, right? Or whoever didn't solve the problem, I guess, had to sit down. So I think it was kind of going pretty much as expected, like someone from line one would win. So someone from line two would sit down, but then someone from line two would win and someone from line one would sit down. But the object of the game was to have basically to get rid of the other team members on the opposing team. And so to be the last team standing, or to, you know, get it to the point where the other team didn't have any more players, right? Because each time a player lost, that team lost a player. I remember it got up to be my turn and I went up to the board and she put the the problem that she wanted us to solve on the board. And I remember I solved my problem and my opponent lost. So they sat down and I was excited. You know, I was feeling competitive. I was feeling good because, hey, this is something I'm good at. This is something I can do well. So this is fun. So she put the next problem up and I solved it. And the, you know, person from the other line had to sit down too. So then by the third time she put a problem up there and I was about to solve it, she kind of seemed a little annoyed that I was still there. And so I solved that problem. And I remember she said to me, you know, Amanda, why don't you go to the back of the line and give someone else a turn? And, you know, in retrospect, I can obviously see why she would ask me to do that. But, you know, I was in the second grade and I remember feeling like because I was doing something well or because I could, you know, do something faster than the other people around me, instead of her saying, wow, you know, that's a great job, Amanda. Have you been studying your multiplication tables or, you know, how did you learn how to do them so quickly or anything? It just felt like I was doing too much and that I was doing something wrong when, you know, the rules of the game were to try to solve the problem as quickly as possible and, you know, beat the competition. And so I'm thinking, okay, this is something I'm good at, so I'm going to win this for my team. And I don't know how much I internalized it at the time, but I do remember the distinct feeling that I was given a task to complete and I completed it perfectly, maybe even exceeding expectations. But it was like, because I was exceeding at the expense of others, I was shamed. And it made me kind of shrink a little bit. In the second grade, it made me feel like, oh, okay, I thought the object of school was to learn and be smart. But for whatever reason, when I show that, I am punished for it. And so, you know, I go on through school and learn even more lessons. And I remember another story from ninth grade when by this point I am in the Academic Magnet High School in Nashville. It's like the number one high school in the whole state of Tennessee. So I'm assuming doing the most and doing too much and being smart and being excellent is kind of how we're supposed to operate. Like everyone's going to be operating on that level here. So why do I need to hold back at all? And so I remember getting this assignment to depict your life without using words. Our teacher said, you know, I want you to create something that shows us, that tells your life story. We might have been reading autobiographies or doing something in the history and literature part of our curriculum. And she wanted us to kind of tell our personal stories to kind of tie in with that. And she said, you know, you have to tell your story without using words. It's not a writing assignment. It's more of a creative assignment. How can you depict who you are without words? And at the time, I was taking music lessons at Blair Music School, which is attached to Vanderbilt University. And I was really, really into the music. It was challenging to me. I loved playing piano and learning about piano. And I was, you know, it was fresh for me because I took lessons every week outside of school. And so I decided that I was going to use music as my theme to kind of show who I was and to tell my life story. So I remember that night, the night before the project was due, I had figured out that I wanted music to be my theme. And I was so excited about it because it was going to be amazing. So I remember I got a piece of poster board and all this construction paper, and I put, oh my God, like more details are coming back. So I remember drawing like the, whatever you call it, like the blank musical, the lines, and then the staff, I guess. Is it the staff? But anyway, I drew the lines in pen for like all of the measures up except for the very last few measures. And the last few measures, I used construction paper to create like darker lines, like this black construction paper. So the lines were black and thick. And that had some meaning. I can't even tell you what it was now, but basically it was like all the lines up to before that point were like not permanent, but these were like permanent lines at the very end. And so like the whole song, it sounds so nerdy to talk about it, but I was into it, y'all. Like you couldn't tell me anything. So I made this big, huge sheet of music, essentially, out of a piece of poster board and construction paper. And I, you know, for every measure, it depicted like either a year of my life or an era of my life. And the notes that kind of went with the measure, however I wrote them, whether they were quarter notes or half notes or whole notes, if they were staccato, I remember putting a staccato symbol over a few notes, because that was like during my parents' divorce. And I had a big crescendo at the end because that was supposed to communicate that everything came together and I triumphantly found my place in life, right? And so I remember holding this oversized piece of poster board up and kind of taking people through this song and explaining to them what each of the symbols meant, what each of the notes meant, and how they corresponded to my life up to that point. And I was so excited about it because I remember it was a fun assignment that stretched me. So I was feeling stretched, but I was also feeling like I was showing more of myself. Like, I feel like at the time I was a good writer, but this was a new skill, a new strength that I was tapping into. It's like communicating in abstract terms. And I just thought it was so clear and it made so much sense and it was just so cool to me. But I remember my classmates just kind of looked at me, not like they didn't understand what I was saying, but it was just, honestly, the look was of intimidation, like, oh, like I wasn't even thinking like that. And I remember my teacher got up after I went and she thanked me for presenting. She said that was really great, but because she was calling on people to come up to the front and present their projects too, she kind of made this like disclaimer to the class that, oh, you know, I don't want you to feel bad, you know, if you're going to come up here and present your project, like it doesn't have to be as detailed as, you know, this one or as thought out as that music one. Like, don't think that just because you didn't do the most, quote unquote, right, that your project isn't any good. And I remember feeling like being so excited leading up to that class period to share my project. But then after sharing it, just feeling stupid and feeling like, you know, I was lame for taking the project and the assignment seriously and for trying my best because my best was too much. And I think what's most interesting about the memory is that I remember my teacher's reaction being not one of encouragement and excitement and like, wow, yes, you know, you really took this assignment to the next level, but almost apologizing to the other students because they hadn't thought so creatively about the assignment and they hadn't come up with something that, I don't want to say interesting, but they hadn't come up with something like that. And I just remember a lot of those moments during school of, you know, when you do try your best and when you do put yourself out there for real, like 100%, this is who I am and this is what I'm really good at. You know, there was obviously a segment of people who celebrated it and liked it, but overwhelmingly it felt like it was not okay to do my best and that my best made other people feel bad about their best. And I've been thinking a lot about how, you know, the experiences that you have around your gift as you are kind of becoming yourself, growing into yourself and learning the power of what you can do, you know, other people's reactions and especially early people's earliest reactions of you when you're operating in your gift can really cloud how you are willing or how much you're willing to show up 100% in your gift. So, you know, I knew that I was a thoughtful student and that I could extract meaning from like the most commonplace things, and that I had this way of getting to the heart of things even then. But for some reason, when I looked at people's reactions to when I was doing that 100% being me, it kind of made me start to feel like me being me was too much, was too, you know, nerdy or corny or deep, quote unquote. Like, that was a word I was labeled a lot. People called me deep. And I started to kind of resent that a little bit, because I didn't want to be deep or corny or nerdy. I just wanted to be normal. I just wanted to fit in. I just wanted to obviously be myself, but I wanted to be respected and liked for being myself and not kind of shamed into being like everyone else. But that's kind of the game of education, I guess, and just groupthink. So I wanted to share the story with you to potentially help you reflect on those times in your life. Like, what are your first memories of operating in your gift? And, you know, were you ever shamed for being too loud or too opinionated or too talkative or too smart or too caring or too sensitive or too passionate? You know, when you were just doing you and being yourself, how did people react to that? And has that made you tone down how you show up today? Right? So like for me, I have kind of this voice in the back of my head that's always telling me, don't talk like a book, right? Like, don't communicate in a way that's too much, because you don't want to turn people off with the examples you use or the vocabulary you use, or you don't want to seem too deep or just too up in the clouds and too esoteric. Like, bring it back down to earth, because when you do too much, people don't like that. And it makes them feel bad about what they're doing if you're doing more than them, right? So like, when you think about what you do now, what you love to do, what your passion is, what your genius is, and when you are really operating in that 100%, if you're not operating in it 100% now, like if you're not embodying that part of yourself that maybe distanced you from people in the past, what is your earliest memory around that? Around actually operating in your gift? When was the last time that you were 100% you and you gave your very best? You know, what happened when you did that? I always thought that, you know, if you give your best and do your best, you can't be upset with whatever the outcome is. But even in remembering doing my best as a young person, I do recall that it distanced me from the people I wanted to be closest to. And so, you know, doing the most, ironically, like showing up as who you are when it's not received very well, can force you into hiding and make you want to shrink. But on the other side of that, doing the most is the thing that attracts the very best opportunities to you. So someone wrote to me after I sent out the email, and I love this so much, and I want to read what she said, and I won't say her name because I didn't ask her for permission, but like, doing the most attracts your ideal clients. It attracts, you know, your ideal job. It attracts readers for your book or your podcast, or, you know, whatever you're out here trying to sell to others. Doing the most is what's going to attract them. But this woman said to me that she shrunk in her college years. She says, most of the people around me did not go to college, or when I was dating, I'd find that the guys I attracted would be intimidated if I talked about getting my degree and work towards eventually getting a master's or doctorate. When I could tell from the body language that people were uncomfortable with my drive, I began to stop talking about it and wouldn't mention it when I met new people. And then I watched Akilah and the Bee, cheesy, I know, and Akilah read the following quote. So it's the Marianne Williamson quote about our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we're powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? Your playing small does not serve the world. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. So she goes on to write, after hearing this quote, I decided I would let my light shine bright. And if you didn't like it, that's your business. Once I decided to be authentic to myself, I've noticed more people are attracted to me for it. My education attracted my husband to me. He liked my drive and it has pushed him to do the same. He's currently working on his master's. So I wanted to share that. Thank you so much for writing to me, Tia, and sharing that with me. But, you know, it is about branding. It is about like attracting the right opportunities to yourself. But when you are you, you really do attract not just people who might want to buy something from you or hire you, but like she said, it attracted her husband. So think about that. Like, do you really want to attract a life partner who is not drawn to the 100% you? How happy are you going to be? Because you're going to have to show up as someone other than yourself. And you're never really going to feel at home in yourself if you're always kind of, you know, putting on this performance of being a person that you think others would like. And so I wanted to share that story and tie it back to your brand, because I really do feel like doing the most and being more of yourself is the key to building a personal brand that's going to attract the type of opportunities to you. It's going to attract students for your courses, readers to your book, listeners to your podcast, you know, attendees to your events, and whatever you are offering people, being more you, more loud, more smart, you know, more nerdy, more thoughtful, more caring, more sensitive, more opinionated, more outspoken, whatever is more you, it's going to, as the Marianne Williamson quote says, it's going to empower other people to be more of them, but it's also going to attract the people who really, really do connect with you on your level. It's going to attract those people to you. And so I wanted to share that today to remind you that it doesn't serve anyone to mute yourself. It doesn't serve anyone, especially not you, to shrink and to hide. And I also just wanted to give you an exercise to reflect back on doing the most in your own life, and what was your first experience of doing that, and maybe not necessarily having it well received or received in the way that you thought. So think about that, and think about how that might be hindering you, or may how it may have hindered you in the past when it comes to going after what you really want. I would love to hear your story and examples of how you've been doing the most, or maybe when did you stop doing the most or start doing the most, and how do you manage doing the most? And when you find yourself not necessarily showing up as your true self, how do you get back on track? How do you get back on course and kind of get back to doing you and really living and embodying your most authentic personal brand? You can visit my website, AmandaMillerLittlejohn.com, and leave me a comment on the post that I shared that's called When Being Yourself is Doing Too Much. Leave me a comment there. You can find me on social media, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook, as well as on my website. Thank you so, so much for listening to this episode. I will share also that Package Your Genius Academy is going to offer a special summer session. So if hanging out with me for 12 weeks sounds like a good time and really getting to know yourself a little bit better and dialing into your personal brand and how you can communicate that brand powerfully to the world, make sure you are signed up for my email list, because updates will be going out soon. Thanks so much for listening. Bye.
Thank you to DJ Connor B on SoundCloud, aka my son Connor Benjamin Littlejohn, for our intro and outro music. The name of the song is Essentialism, and you can find it on Connor's SoundCloud at DJ Connor B.